One of my favorite things.
So I would like everyone to welcome Jim. Jim from?
Island.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Jim. I'm a close friend and a food addict.
Hi, Jim.
I've, just get the numbers out of the way, I've been in program 4 years. My abstinence, I just celebrated my 4-year abstinence date, December 27th. I have my, since being in program, I've lost over 300 pounds. My highest weight ever was 530. I now weigh 215. That's just one of the, that's the physical aspect of the program. I bought little pictures too. And I always bring these pants with me. They are a reminder for me to never go back here. Because these are the jeans I was wearing when I came into my first meeting. And I can fit into one leg completely. And these were actually tight on me when I walked into the room. So these are the only jeans that I actually allow. I keep these because it's a reminder. It is a place that I never want to go back again. And I could ever so easily go back there. So my story. Food was an obsession for me my entire life. I always remember food. Food was always there. And it was always an issue with my family and everything. Everything was always about, you need to lose weight. Why are you eating so much? I was put on my first diet when I went to the doctor. I was only like 7 or 8. That's when the diet started. And I remember the blue and the yellow sheets from the doctor because they were different calorie counts. And everybody always said, well, what is wrong with you? Why can't you just stop eating? And I didn't have an answer for him. I couldn't. That's all I wanted to do. I ate. And from the time I can remember, it was always some kind of sugar or candy. I don't know if we can say foods here. Mm-hmm. I was a sneak eater, too. You know, I'm one of 6 kids. We lived in a small house. How I thought I was fooling anybody, I have no idea. I used to hide in the corner of the kitchen and try to sneak candy and cookies out of the cabinet, thinking nobody ever saw me. But how could, I don't know how I thought I was fooling anybody, because you could see me from any room. There was no place to hide. And I used to get up in the middle of the night and get food when everybody else was sleeping, because that was the only way to do it. Except my mother was a night owl. She would be up until 3 in the morning, so it made it a little challenging. But even when I would still go in, and I would still sneak it. And I never understood why. I just always knew that's what I wanted. I wanted food. 24 hours a day, I did whatever I could to get food. And growing up, we always... there were 6 of us. There wasn't a lot of money in the house. So it was, everything was very much, you had your portion at dinner and you didn't have any more. Well, I was always trying to get more. And I was always like trying to figure out a way to have more and eat somebody else's. And I would scrape the plates because that meant that I got to eat the food off of the plates. It just drove me. And I battled depression ever from the time I was 14. That was the first time I ever went and saw a therapist. And that was only because my parents wanted me to, and I wanted to drop out of high school because school was horrible. School was absolutely horrible. I was fat. I was uncoordinated. Even then I was struggling to come to terms with my sexuality. I knew I was gay, but I couldn't say the word. I didn't know what that meant. And I wasn't your typical boy, so I didn't like sports. I was just, did not fit in anywhere. And even in the band that I was in, I didn't fit in the band. And high school was horrible, and there was, I was tormented, and there was a kid that used to chase me around, calling me the missing link, and it was like, I wanted to drop out of school. That's all I wanted. And my parents forced me to go to a therapist, and the therapist was, it wasn't very helpful. I don't really even remember. I don't remember the therapist. It was the first in a long line of therapists that I would see. Some were good, some were bad. But I don't really remember that guy very well or what we really talked about. And all I could think of, all I wanted to do, I had to just make it through high school. I had to make it through high school. And I just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I couldn't stop. There was just nothing, I didn't care. I didn't care to stop either. I wanted it. And when I graduated from high school, I was like, freedom. I'm 18, I can drive, I can go places, I can get food on my own. I didn't have any money because I couldn't get a job. But then forget when I got a job, oh my God. Then there was like, I could get food whenever I wanted to get food. And I actually, my first job was at a Denny's. What better place for a food addict to actually have to work in? And at one point, I actually was working the graveyard shift. So we were all alone. There was like food that you couldn't eat. I didn't pay. No one was around. The managers weren't there. We were on our own. I don't even know how much food I must have eaten. I mean, it was just all there. The cans of whipped cream, the things like this, the tapioca pudding. I'd eat one a night. It just was uncontrollable. And it was also at this time that I actually got, as I said before, and I was like, I was struggling with coming to terms with, and I finally went and I found a therapist, and I was coming to terms with being gay, but I got into therapy because I thought I would rather be dead than have to tell anybody, and I was suicidal, and somebody talked me into getting help, and I got help. But of course, this is when I started hanging out with people, and this is when the drinking and the drugs started. So as I've come to learn, I am a true addict. I am not, food is just not my only substance, alcohol and drugs as well. And I don't really remember most of my 20s. My 20s are a blur. I was either drunk or stoned or in a food fog. And it really, there isn't a lot that I really remember from it. And I always, people will talk about, do you remember when the Berlin Wall came down? And I'm like, when did the Berlin Wall came down? I don't remember that story at all. And at different points, I was willing. I did many different things. I did many weigh and pay diets. I did Weight Watchers, I don't know how many times. I did fast. I mean, I did everything that you could imagine they put me on. And when I was 25, when I was 25, I went to Nutrisystem, and at that time they had offices, and you went in and you got waiting, had your own food, and I got down, the highest I was like 326, and I got down to about 5 pounds heavier than I am now. And I thought, this is great, this is the answer, I'm happy. Well, no, that's not how my story goes, as we can see, because I'm here. And at that time, I actually started with, all through being a kid, I always had health issues. I was always at the doctor. There was always something wrong with me. There was always, I had stomach issues, and it was nerves and stress, and it was the family stomach, and I was always sick. And my health issues started at this point too, and I got to the point where my resting pulse rate was like 120, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong, and I was diagnosed with Graves' disease, which is hyperthyroidism, and I was 25, and they're like, men who are 25 don't get this, it's women in their 40s. I was like, okay. And so dealing with all that, the stress of everything, what did I do? Oh, I went back to the food and the drugs and the alcohol, and I put all that weight that I had lost, I think I put back on in less than 3 months. So I was right back to where I was, and then I just went higher. And then the medication that I had to be on was, if you're an emotional person, you don't want to be on medication and have a thyroid issue, because your thyroid controls so many things, and emotions is one of them. I was, for a year while I was on this, I was absolutely an insane person. I'd be laughing 1 second, then I'd be sobbing once, and I was doing this at work as well. I was sitting on the windowsill at work one time sobbing, and I'm like, it was just out of, and everything was out of control. Food, alcohol, whatever I could get my hands on. And so that diet just kind of fell to the side. And I...
You have plenty of time.
I just like to... So when I was 31, I thought I had an upper respiratory infection that kept getting worse. And I was actually diagnosed with congestive heart failure. And I really, it felt like my heart was just going to explode out of my chest. I was 31 years old. And they had no explanation. It could have been from the thyroid. It could have been from my weight. There's heart disease in my family. And I remember going home and telling my parents, and they're like, well, you heard them wrong. Because old people have congestive heart failure, and you die from that. And I'm like, well, yes, you do. But it took, I don't know how much diuretic they had to give me in order before they would let me go out of the hospital. And so here I was, 31. I had congestive heart failure. You would think, maybe I should take care of myself. No, I ate more. The drugs and the alcohol had faded by this point, and the food had just become everything to me. And I ate out of control. I got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then when I was 35, I hit 500 for the first time. So I put on over 200 pounds after that. After I was diagnosed with a life-threatening heart condition, I just put on more weight. And around 35, my mom, my dad had gone through triple bypass, but my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and she was only given 14 months to live. And I learned at this point my whole family was food addicts, because we all dealt with the stress of this, but we all sat around and ate with one another. And I ate when we left, but we all sat and we ate together, and that's how I got through that. And it was a horrible year. And she came, and I was having problems with there was something in my throat, and because I felt a lump in my throat, and I went to my doctor, and he said, you're too fat to feel anything, and I can't feel anything. I said, I don't really care if I'm too fat. There's something. And finally, after 3 months of them ignoring me, I said, listen, either you do something, or I'm finding another doctor. And they did a sonogram of my heart, and there was tumors on my thyroid that they said I shouldn't have been able to feel. So this was 2000. So September 1st of 2000, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. September 7th, my mom came home with hospice care, and we were taking care of her. Never imagined being in that position and doing the things that we did for her, but we just did it. She died on October 9th. My sister and I were with her. October 23rd, I had the surgery to remove my thyroid. That first week of December, I was in the hospital. I had to have radiation treatment. And what they actually do is they give you an overdose of radiation, and you're quarantined, and you're not allowed to have anybody in the room, and you can't leave, and you're the only thing that's allowed to leave the room is you. Your clothes everything has to go out. They had paper. I had to walk on the paper. It was just the most bizarre thing. And then February 7th, my dad died, and I was the one who found him. And then March 25th, I was in a car accident, and I hit my head on the roof of the car. And if I had been, of course, I didn't have a seatbelt on because I was 500 pounds. If I had been like 3 inches shorter or 100 pounds lighter, I would have went right through the windshield. And to say I gave up at this point is the understatement. I just was like, I was so done. I was so angry. I went to the grief counselors, and I wanted them to give me an answer of why all this had to happen. And they couldn't give me an answer. And I was yelling at them the one time. I'm like, well, I find that unacceptable. You need to give me an answer of why. Why did she have to get sick? And, you know, she died and he died almost four months to the day later. And why did I have to get cancer at the same time my mother did? And why was mine curable and hers wasn't? And it was just, I was enraged. And I had always had rage issues my entire life. I've put my fist through the wall, I've broken things, I've thrown things up against the wall, and my rage got the better of me for a large part of my life, and the drinking and the drugs did not help that. And I just... Let's see how long.
About 25 minutes.
Okay. Just trying to judge how much. And of course, throughout the time, I had been in and out of therapy, and I had this one therapist, and she was god awful. And I still kept going to her because I knew her, I was comfortable with her, and I thought she was helping with my mother, but she really wasn't. And she was telling me about her other patients, which was just like, it just really became, but I was such a sick person, I couldn't see that it wasn't healthy and that I needed to actually get up and leave. And it was right around that time that, too, in my anger state, and I was, I started having panic attacks again. And I had panic attacks my whole life, and I would get them to the point where I would go someplace and I would actually not be able to breathe, and I wouldn't be able to get out of my car, and I'd have to go back home. I joined college three times, and I could get myself to the parking lot, and then I literally could not breathe. I left. I couldn't get myself out of the car. And it was around all this time that I also was sexually abused as a child. And this is when all that started coming to surface. And I talked to that therapist, and she said, that couldn't have happened. And because I'm an incest survivor. And she goes, that couldn't have happened. And I was like, I left there, and I was literally flipping out. And I called my friend, who's a therapist, and he was like, give me her name. I'm going to go. So I left her. And then it drove me into eating, and I got out of control. It was September of 2007. I think that's when it was. 2010. It was September of 2010. I thought I had an upper respiratory infection again. And I was sitting in my apartment, and it was 2 in the morning, and I actually could not breathe. And I'm like, I probably should go to the hospital. And I stood up to drive myself, and I could feel myself passing out. And so I stopped, and I congestive heart failure again. And I actually almost died that time. If I had not called the ambulance, I would have died because I lived alone. And what did I take this to mean? I'm just going to eat more when I got home from the hospital. And I got diagnosed with... They had to do an invasive procedure, which they thought I had a cardiac catheterization. They didn't think I would survive. That's what they told me the whole time. And I was diagnosed with a cardiomyopathy, moderately severe heart disease. And again, what did I do? I just kept eating. I just kept eating and eating and eating. And in the beginning of the following year, I just shut myself off from everybody. And I stayed in my apartment for 4 months. I didn't leave my apartment. I wasn't talking to people. I was canceling doctor's appointments, which, considering my health, was a really bad idea. And finally, in July of 2011, I had another medical emergency, and I wound up going to a doctor, and I was sitting in his office, and he never examined me. He came in the room, and he said, your whole problem is you need to weigh 190 pounds, and he walked out. Never examined me, never helped me. And I was just, I was humiliated, I was mortified, and I left, and I did what any sane normal person would do. I went to the nearest fast food restaurant, I bought food with as much money as I could, all the money I had in my wallet, I bought food, and I shoved it in my face as I drove home and sobbed. And I just, I knew I was done. I didn't know what the answer was. And I found a outpatient recovery center in Manhattan. And I'm like, because I was looking online, I was like, I need to be admitted somewhere. I need help. And I found this, and I went into Manhattan, and it was, I met this woman, and she said, I can change your life. It's all about brain chemistry. You're an addict. She goes, sugar is just as much of an addiction as any white powder, and that's her whole philosophy. She goes, if you follow my food plan, I can change your life. And I did not trust anybody. I ran from people, but I trusted her. And I did it. And the food plan was no sugar, no flour, no wheat, no caffeine, no artificial sweeteners, no processed foods, weighed and measured. And it was really difficult, but I did it because I knew I had no choice at this point. And part of being there is you have to be in 12-step program. So I went to my first OA meeting. It was the second Sunday of September, and I knew about OA for 20 years because, of course, that was one of the things everyone's like, well, you need to be in OA, and I'm like, God, no, I don't want to hear that. So I finally went to my first meeting. And I tell them, it's my home meeting now, and I'm there every week. I tell them, I hated it. Oh, my God, did I hate my first meeting. If I could have physically got up and run from the building, I would have. I'm like, these people are crazy. I don't belong here. I was like, no, this is not it. And then people were talking to me. My God, why are they talking to me? And then someone tried to hug me, and that was like almost a deal breaker. It's like, okay, no. I'm much better at that now, but anyway. So, and then the second week I got locked in the building. I got locked in the bathroom. But I kept coming because I knew, even though how much I did, it was where I needed to be. I knew this is where I belonged. And funny, nobody believes this now, but I did not talk to anybody for the first 4 months. I didn't say a word. I didn't do anything. I showed up. I sat there, no one, I just didn't do anything. And for those of you who remember Margaret was the person that she got me involved. I was there for one meeting and she just threw something out. She goes, do this. And I was like, okay. I wasn't going to argue with her. I knew better. She's the one that introduced me to my first sponsor. She's the one that got me to do service. She's the one that got me to speak for the first time. In her way, but she was really helpful to me. She really got me to focus on program and to get involved and to do stuff. And I started working with my sponsor. And I was also a diabetic. There's many other health issues I didn't even go with but I was diabetic. When I came into program, my fasting blood sugar was 390 and my A1C was 9.7. Now my A1C is 5.1 and my fasting blood sugars are 77. But within 6 months I was off all my diabetes medicine and my endocrinologist was like shocked. He's like, whatever you're doing. He also didn't believe I would keep up with it. He kept saying that I was going to fail, so I started working with my sponsor and I started doing service. I went in September, and I picked up on December 26th. I was dealing with groups. Somebody had talked about their sexual abuse, and it triggered something in me, and I ate. And after that, I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. So December 27th, I didn't pick up. I started going to phone meetings. I got involved the 100 pounders at 9 o'clock every night. I did that every night of the week. I did my face-to-face meeting. I waited too long to get a sponsor. I don't recommend that. It was 6 months. I started working with my sponsor. I started committing my food. I started doing the writings. I started working the steps. I did readings every day. I prayed every day. And prayer for me, 15 minutes? Mm-hmm. Prayer for me was very challenging because I grew up, I was raised in a religion that I have no use for a lot of reasons. Because they have no use for me in a lot of ways, so I have no use for them. And I was brought up on a vengeful, unforgiving God. And that certainly was not a God that I was going to turn to for help, because that's not what we were taught. And I had to find a way to get a connection to a higher power and to get that spiritual recovery. Because the physical recovery I still have, I've maintained my weight for 2 years, but if I didn't get the spiritual and the emotional recovery as well, I'd be 530 pounds right now. So I had to find a way to do it. And people ask me all the time how you do it, but it's not an answer that you can just give anybody. Everyone has to find their own way. And I found a way, and I found a way to my higher power, and I hear my higher power. And I also learned from other people that my higher power speaks to me through other people, through other members in OA, through my sponsor, through my sponsees when I started getting sponsees. So it's you have to listen for it as well. So my spiritual recovery I started working on, and the prayer in the beginning was very difficult for me because I had to act as if, because I didn't really believe it and I didn't feel anything. But I started, and I do the same thing every morning. I get up, I say prayers, I say the Serenity Prayer. It evolved into, I talk with God. I have conversations with God every morning, and I talk about what my day is going to be and what I need help with and what character defects I still need removing, because I still need removing. And then new ones pop up. And I read For Today and Voices of Recovery, and I talk to my sponsor. I commit my food for the day. I talk to my sponsees. And I don't get to as many meetings as I like to because of my schedule with work. But that helps with the spiritual aspect of my program. I have to work that as hard as I do as the physical. And that's following my food plan. And especially on the days when I don't want to follow my food plan. Because there are days when I'm like, oh, I stupid food. I hate this food. I just don't want to look at it. I want to throw it across the room. I'm just like, oh my God, I can't. But that's okay. I just have to do it for today. And I just changed something on my food plan. I talked to my sponsor about it. I didn't change it on my own. And it's okay. And the spiritual, it's something that I have to work at. And I still have to work to improve it, because everything can always use improvement. And the emotional aspect, I am in therapy. I will probably be in therapy for the rest of my life. I am lucky that I found a therapist at the center that I went to that was a tremendous help to me and really made headways. And I'm not the same person I was when I came into the rooms. I would never have talked about being gay in front of people. I would never have talked about being an incest survivor. But the more I talk about it, for me, is it takes the power away from that. And that doesn't define who I am. It defines what happened to me, but it doesn't define who I am. And I'm still working on coming to terms with that. And still work on it, and it still work. And I have my therapist, and I have a new therapist who I just started, and he's perfect. And that I will, like I said, if I have to be in therapy until the day I die, I probably will have to be. But I'm okay with that. I have to do whatever I need to do to stay abstinent, and I will do whatever it takes. I will stick to my food plan even when I don't want to. I will pray. I will read. I will work on the steps. My writings had slipped off, and I'm doing the writing on a daily basis with my sponsor now, because I have to do that. I'm actually doing the stuff based on the For Today. I'm doing the For Today workbook. I have to talk to my sponsees. I have to help them. I have to do service. I took on a new sponsee, or just helping somebody at the meeting. I have to do whatever service I can, because service is also important, because that's, even if you just show up to a meeting, if you set up chairs, although they're not letting me set up chairs, because just really quickly, life is fantastic. I have to say, my life is pretty damn good. I've done amazing things in recovery. I went ziplining. I went jet skiing. I went skydiving. I jumped out of a plane 13,000 feet. It was the most amazing experience I've ever had in my entire life. I felt like I was flying, and it was the most freedom I have ever felt. It was just amazing. I think everybody should do it, but that's another story. I'm not saying if you become abstinent and you're for 4 years are going to want to jump out of a plane. No, that was what I wanted, because it was never an option for me at 530 pounds. They would never have let me in. And that was just, it was beyond description. Just hanging there and looking down going, I should not be this high. I should not be this high off the ground. Like, and there's nothing there. That was so cool. Just, I've done many things. I've faced so many fears. And I've had bad days. Oh my, there are horrible days. I've had really bad times. On those times when I rely on program to do it. In November, I actually wound up in the hospital. I had a stroke on my spine, which is an odd, strange thing I've ever heard of. But basically what happened was there's a lesion on my spine, and my right arm became immobile, and I still have weakness in my right arm, my right leg, and I'm in physical therapy right now. And I was in the hospital, and they couldn't diagnose me, and I saw 10 different neurologists because they couldn't figure it out, and I was the buzz of the neurology department, which is not something you really want to be. And They finally, it was just the oddest thing. And I have limitations now because I have a tear in arteries in my neck, so I'm not allowed any contact sports, which was really killer for me because I played so many contact sports. No one knows me, but that's just, and no golf, nothing violent with my neck, no more skydiving. Oh. But I'm okay with that. I got to do it once. I don't have to do it again. But you know what? And I was in the hospital for 6 days. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I had three MRIs. I had a spinal tap. I had an EEG. I had all this stuff done to me, and I was so done. But I ate abstinently, and the food in the hospital made it very easily for me to do that. And I stayed abstinent, because what would I have done if I wasn't abstinent? I wouldn't have been able to deal with it. And it has been, I got home and I was actually afraid to move my neck for like a week. I didn't move my neck in any direction because I was like, it's going to explode if I move it the wrong way, because how did it happen to begin with? But I had to eventually let go of that. And I'm doing physical therapy and I'm getting better. And you know what? God saw me through it. God was there for me. I spoke to God. Spoke to God a lot in the hospital. My sponsor, my friends in OA were there for me. My family was there for me. And I made it through. I made it through abstinently. And I cannot believe that I did. It if you had asked me 4 years ago, what could I have done that without going for the food that I wanted? No, I would never have a... I don't think it was ever possible. And I'm not saying that there weren't days that I wanted something, because, oh, yes, there were. There have been, even recently. New Year's Eve was a really rough day for me. I wanted to act out in any way possible, and that is how I know I am a true addict. It's not limited to food. New Year's Eve afternoon, I wanted food, I wanted drugs, I wanted alcohol, I wanted any addictive substance you could have named, I wanted it, and I wanted it really bad. And I made a phone call, and somebody called me, and I talked to my sponsor, and I had to commit to my sponsor that I wasn't going to do anything, even though I didn't really want to commit to that, but I did. And I've done a lot of writings. I must have written, last weekend, I think I must have written almost 4 hours. Not everything I read to my sponsor, but I had to get it out of me. I had to just get those feelings out. And I've spoken for 45 minutes, and I still feel like there's stuff I didn't talk about. But the tools of the program really are there. If you use the tools of the program, they will help you get through it. I am really bad at some of them, like telephone I'm very bad at. The rest of them I try to work, and I try to figure out a way to work them in on a daily basis. I don't always do it that well, but I do what I can. And every day I talk to my sponsor, and it's just, I'm going to do the best that I can today. And that's all that I have. And I talk to God, and it's just whatever I'm going through, I talk to him, and I know that he will help me. I know that he's going to be there for me. And even I was really nervous about coming tonight. It was really making me very nervous. And I just knew that if I trusted my higher power, that it would be fine. He would tell me what to say. I did not prepare one thing. I had no idea what I was going to talk about. I just figured I'm just going to let it come out, just going to come from the heart, and I believe it's my higher power just telling me what I'm supposed to say. I have no idea. I have no idea what I said. But program has saved my life, and I came into program, I was a hopeless individual. I thought there was nothing, and I'm full of hope. I have hope for every. I have hope that tomorrow is going to be a better day, and I have hope that my life is going to be good. And I have to hold on to that.
Thanks for sharing. Okay, it stopped. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Why do I have such a hard time turning this thing off? It's still recording.
You press stop?
Several times.